Disclosure initiative. Catherine?
Thank you, Hans. Good morning, everyone. So on the disclosure initiative, we have the one paper for you today, which is on our accounting policies project. By way of information for anyone in the room or indeed listening in who is wondering where targeted standards level review is, just to confirm that we have, as of last week, completed our series of one-to-one investor outreach meetings, and over the next 2.5 weeks we'll be discussing all of the detailed feedback we've received with various of the board's consultative groups. Once that is complete, we'll be bringing back all of the feedback we've heard to the board. But the topic for today is accounting policies. So to talk about that, over to Siobhan.
Okay. So paragraphs 5 to 8 summarise the tentative board decisions made on this project so far. In particular, in its October 2018 meeting, the board discussed guidance and examples for the materiality practice statement. At that meeting, the board tentatively decided to clarify that not all accounting policies relating to material transactions, other events or conditions are themselves material to the financial statements, and to continue developing guidance and examples to help entities better exercise judgment about whether the accounting policies they apply to material transactions, other events or conditions are themselves material. So the purpose of this meeting is to revisit the examples for the materiality practice statement following the board member feedback. Paragraphs 12 to 14 detail the feedback we received from board members regarding the guidance for entities to use when applying the four-step materiality process. We think board member feedback on the guidance is best addressed through the drafting process. Consequently, we are not asking the board to make any further decisions about the guidance at this meeting. Paragraphs 15 to 23 detail the feedback received from board members regarding examples demonstrating the application of the four-step materiality process to accounting policy disclosure. In light of that feedback, we are now asking the board whether it agrees with the staff recommendation that the board should use two examples to accompany the guidance for entities to use when applying the four-step materiality process to accounting policy disclosure, and that those two examples should highlight the need to focus on information that is useful to users of financial statements and demonstrate how the application of the four-step materiality process can address the issues of, firstly, generic information being disclosed in accounting policies that are material to the financial statements. Such an example would be similar to that in paragraph 21 of the paper. And secondly, instances in which accounting policy disclosures contain only information that repeats the requirements of IFRS standards. Such an example of this nature would be similar to that in paragraph 23 of the paper. And with that, I would like to hand over to the board.
Sue was first.
And I might be going to misbehave slightly, so I apologise in advance. But I agree with your recommendations in terms of including two examples, and I liked the examples that you'd included. But my only request is that I think we need to be careful with the choice of words, and I won't get too much into drafting here, but in the materiality practice statement, we're illustrating examples where things are material to users of financial statements, which I think is more than useful to users of financial statements. And I think we need to be careful, so, and I am going to use the words just to illustrate, on paragraph 23, I guess, in the last paragraph where we say the entity concluded that disclosing a separate accounting policy for impairment is unlikely to be useful to an understanding and is therefore not material. The materiality practice statement, going and looking at pretty thoroughly at the examples in preparation, uses slightly different words as a typically in the examples. It talks about the information could affect decision making of users and therefore is material, not is therefore material or not material. So I just, can we just be careful to align the wording with the examples and to focus on decision-making, because I think that's what the materiality practice statement is about. So I agree with your examples. It is sort of wording, but it's important wording.
Tom.
I think same vein, strongly support the recommendation, and I really like the two examples. I have just a concern about the way the first one's introduced, and just to highlight, so the second introduction addresses instances in which, scenario two, addresses instances in which accounting policy disclosures contain only information repeats, and then you do a nice illustration of the problem. In the first one, you say the example addresses boilerplate or generic, and then you provide an example, but to me it's a much more positive example. You're providing an example of the correct application of the five items in paragraph A1C. And you do a really nice job. The first three don't get you to materiality, the last two do. And so I would prefer that you accentuated the positive. And I note that in so doing, you could say that you avoid boilerplate, you equally limit repetition. So, you know, in doing a good thing, you're avoiding both the problems. And so I just was thinking of more flipping it into the affirmative.
Gary?
Thank you. But a very well-crafted document, and I absolutely support the direction. Just more of comments, perhaps, than questions. But to me, the key thing is here is contained in paragraph 7A. And although that was decided a few months ago, this is, if we're trying to get rid of extraneous information in the document and unbulk it, it's key to keep reinforcing that not all accounting policies are material, even if the underlying amounts recognized are material. And I think we can't say that enough. Since it's not the element, it's the policy material. And and I think, you know, we've gone through, you know, when you change your accounting policy, it's flex among alternatives, I mean, large amounts of judgment estimation and so on, may or may not make the policy material, but that should be the universe you look at these things from. I think, so saying that mostly, I just want to re-emphasize that I think the two examples you've got are very good examples, and I think, yes, the question, should we do more? And of course, you can always do more, but I think it probably would draw undue weight, you know, and attention, you know, from the subject that's there. I think in my experience, again, as we draft, you know, the final documents on this thing, even if you don't want to repeat what's in the IFRS standard or have a long, you know, setup of what your internal processes are, oftentimes a lot of information is written because it's a contextual setup when you finally get to the policy. That's different than repeating the IFRS standard, but at the same time, it may not always be necessary. Sometimes you just don't worry about, you know, all the background, the information, the buildup of internal procedures and stuff. Just get to the point in it. So, again, I agree with the recommendation, but I think beyond to these points of the kind of saying make its way somehow into the final documents on this project.
Nick?
Thank you. So as Gary is, I'm very supportive of the general direction here. I think the changes are essential really to make sure disclosed accounting policies actually have greater traction. They're actually used, they don't just get through in terms of the financial statements. I think the balance is right in terms of two examples in the context of the broader document. And the only little thing which I've mentioned previously is just some of the wording in the first example at the top of page 9. It just talking about the accounting policy information felt a bit too close to a tailored accounting policy to me. And so perhaps you modified, changed anything, but just avoiding perhaps the word tailored.
Thank you. I really appreciate the improvement you made to this example, and I also appreciate, like Nick said, you reduced it into two. And this is really nice. And just one question to the example one. This is about boilerplate example. For page 8, you picked up the two elements. One is significant judgment, and the other is the reflection of own circumstances. And that this is a really nice example. My question is, suppose conglomerates has five segments. Yeah, and so each one of the segments are equally material each other. No one single segment is super material. So then in such a case, in each business have a kind of significant judgment and kind of reflecting on circumstances. If that is the case, do you recommend to show the accounting policy for five segments, or entity must exercise the judgment of materiality in terms of quantitative analysis? So two segments are bigger than other three segments. Do you think such kind of practice is necessary?
I think we would probably lean more towards your second point, which is that the company as a whole would need to apply materiality judgment, both qualitative and quantitative, to determine which of those five segments would need accounting policy disclosure. And if they determine that all five are material and that all five of these need to be disclosed, then they need to at least go through the process to determine whether or not it's five or less.
Okay. So there are two elements. One is the element as a qualitative basis. So in that case, you have to look at whether you are making significant judgment or is it highly related to their own circumstances. And then qualitative assess is necessary. But at the same time, so they have variety of business, and they each have similar situation. So in that case, you have to exercise kind of comprehensive judgment, which segment you want to show in the statement. And then it may be possible that all five segments accounting policy has to be disclosed.
Yes.
Chen Chao.
Yes. First of all, I support staff's proposal. I think it's a very good paper and very good examples provided to help the entity to apply materiality to improve their existing disclosure of accounting policies. But when I read the two examples, one question come out or one clarification needed with regard to the first step one, about identify. In October 2018 meeting, we made a decision that clarify that not all accounting policies relating to material transactions, other events or conditions are themselves material to the financial statements. So that means first the entity needed to identify whether the transactions or other events are material or not. If they are material, then next step, whether those accounting policies relative to those transactions and events are material or not. So the question is that what's the material, you know, the first step, material transactions events we refer to. Based on the examples we're giving, example one, first we identify that the revenue is material to the financial statement. Regardless of the amount of the revenue, based on the example two, we first identify that the entity has material amounts of the intangible assets and the PPEs. So it's based on the amount, not based on the item. So maybe there are different explanations. First, simply based on the transaction itself, material. Second, maybe it's based on the revenue or assets, that's its accounting output arising from the transactions or other events, material or not. Thirdly, it's still not enough. It should be based on the amount of those items, whether they are material or not. So I'm a little confused that what's the first step we needed to identify.
It's possible that there's a drafting question that we should discuss with you if this isn't clear, but I'll answer the question and see if it satisfies your concern. Essentially, that first step is asking for nothing other than for an entity to look at what is material in the financial statements, which it will be doing anyway for the purposes of preparing them, and then for everything that is material, it then goes on to consider whether the accounting policy is material. So that is the same materiality judgment that is applied always based on both qualitative and quantitative factors. And if an item is material, then question two is the accounting policy itself material?
I think if this is the case, it's possible. I think we needed to improve some wording to clarify further, because simply based on the example we're giving, I think it's very good guidance, but it's better to clarify further in these two examples to guide people, because that's the first step. It's really important to identify what's the material transaction are the events we're prepared to.
Sorry, could I just clarify to make sure we're understanding correctly? Is it the case that your concern is around the application of step one, as in companies deciding whether an item in the financial statements is material?
Yes.
That's where the concern is.
Because this is the starting point. If the material, the transaction is not material, the company do not need to go to the next step. What's the accounting policy they needed to disclose.
Yeah.
So that's the starting, step. I think it should be very clear to let the entity know that what they need to start from. Yeah.
Okay. I think we're trying to focus the examples very much on the question around accounting policy, because the rest of the materiality practice already gives a lot of helpful guidance to companies about determining whether items in the financial statements are themselves material. So I hope that the resolution may be in drafting, if we make sure we've introduced the examples in a way that eliminates the concern.
Yeah, if this is the case, I think assume that those transactions are material first.
Yeah.
Yeah, not simply refer to the revenue or the amount of material, something like that. Maybe we are just at different, points. Yeah.
Anne.
Thanks, Hans. I looked at the examples in terms of what you already had in the materiality practice statement and what sort of how they fitted in there, and so I thought two was right to keep going. But I also thought that what you chose was good, because there isn't a lot of illustration around judgments and estimates in the materiality practice statement as it stands now. So that was another reason for these two being useful. And then in looking at those two and what is not covered, I suppose the area is the policy choice area, but that would seem to be more straightforward. So if I had to choose an area that I wasn't going to cover because of limited examples, it would be policy choice. So I do agree here in the two that you've chosen that you've tried to bring out the ones that will be most informative, most useful, fulfill the role that you want for them, which is to guide and illustrate. Because really what you're trying to do is demonstrate and allow entities or preparers, individuals, to look at something and get more encouragement about what they can now not include. I see that as an underlying aim of what you're trying to do. So choice of examples is important, and I agree with these. I did also notice the point that Nick has raised about the word tailored, that has suddenly become a very sensitive word for us. So please use something else.
I'm very supportive of what you proposed to us. So I just have a very small question. Related to example two, and whether you regard, the identification of cash generating units belonging to the significant judgments and assumptions that an entity has to make.
Sorry, I didn't quite catch the...
At the level at which you identify the cash generating units, what cash generating units are in your entity? Do you regard that as a significant judgment?
Well, it's a judgment that would need to be made, and in some cases it would absolutely be significant. I could think of several examples off the top of my head where it would be.
No, we want to make sure that based on this example, people do not omit valuable information.
So, sorry, is your concern about the completeness of the example in the sense?
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't have a definite view. I raised the question more than I want to bring a response.
So, what would you be wanting some sort of clarification around within the fact pattern that the entity didn't have to apply significant judgments in assessing the cash generating units? Is that?
Well, I regard the level at which cash generating units are determined as an important information, because it has it really has an impact. So,
see, in the example, you imply that there is no significant judgment involved in determining your cash generating units.
No. That's my question is whether because basically you say nothing is to be disclosed, because either it's just the requirements, or you have significant judgments that you disclose because of IS1, or you have the specific disclosures already in IS36, which are pretty detailed. So I follow you as long as the identification of cash generating units is encompassed within the judgments that the entity has to make.
Okay.
Martin.
Only to explain why I'm not supporting that, because I don't support the concept of materiality for accounting policies, because I think it is a wrong concept for that, and it undermines, because even this first example, I understand all that maybe inputs, assumptions, all is useful, but is it really material? I have never seen a kind of a company had said my financial statements are really now have a material error because I had an error in my accounting policy. And that is, my understanding is, okay, that is a wrong concept, and therefore I'm not in favor of all those six examples, because I think it undermines the overall concept of materiality.
Can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
Subject to wording.